everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Today is a Wednesday. Oh, those big news Wednesdays. Well, at the very least, we get to talk about the big news, whether it happened today or not. And so I feel like we're doing what we're supposed to do, J.R. Jackson, right? We got some big stories, huh?
I mean, we've got some big stories. I can't say I'm too happy about having to talk about these big stories this time, but yeah, we've got the normal load, right?
We do. There's a few tough ones. And in addition, we will be taking stock at some of the, obviously we're alluding to in part the Derek Chauvin verdict. We're also going to be talking about some people's response to it. A couple of responsible responses, and then the other ones. And I hate to do it to you, but we're going to have to talk about some of these. I did limit it though. There were others that I did not include.
There's several others.
Oh, there's several others, and I just couldn't do it to JR. I couldn't do it to myself. I would have been fine doing it to the audience, but I couldn't do it to us. So anyway, and look, in addition to Chauvin and all of that, we've also got a Kyrsten Sinema not taking a day off of being the worst. We've got that story about James Carville defending AOC and other news besides. Before we jump into our stories though, I did want to make one announcement. It is that we were very surprised to see yesterday that the Damage Report has been recognized by the Webby Awards as a Webby honoree in the social category for news and politics. Earning this distinction is a testament to our work here on the Damage Report and the support of the Dragon Squad. And by the way, it's the social category, so it doesn't have anything to do with me. It is all Sophie and Marissa on our various social platforms. So thank you to both of you as well as Julian and a number of others and the graphics team that puts together these posts and
yeah, so what does this mean?
It's the TikToks and all that.
You're not like nominated, it's like you just get like an honoree.
Sure, yes, exactly. It's not a specific thing. It's like a hey, you're one of a good number that we like.
Oh, I see.
So that's nice. Thank you. And thank you to everybody who made it happen. Not voted, I don't think. I don't really know what it is, but thank you. They did message us about it. And so I'm excited. So thank you to all of you. Also, one of the last reminders, although there will be a few more, tomorrow is Earth Day. Okay, so be sure to visit Earth. And then after that, join us after the post game of the Young Turks, where we're going to be doing an all-encompassing special for Earth Day, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. We've got Cenk and Anna and Ida and Brett and the Sunrise Movement's going to be here. And we're going to have a ton of fun talking about the environment, the Green New Deal. We're going to be doing a supersized meanwhile in of international environmental news, some stories that we actually missed here on TDR that we're going to talk about. So it's going to be awesome. If you like the environment or some people who live in it, you're definitely going to want to tune in. And with that, JR, ready to do this thing?
I'm ready, man.
I think so. Are you all ready though? If you are, please hit the like button. If you haven't already, then you weren't ready. Don't lie to me, okay? Don't lie to me. Anyway, with that, we can do the news. Yesterday, and I'm sure you're finding out about this for the first time here right now, Derek Chauvin was convicted on all of the counts that he was facing, unintentional second degree murder, third degree murder, and second degree manslaughter, which was somewhat surprising when you consider that only 7 police officers have been convicted of murder for police shootings since 2005. That is after thousands of these shootings, 7 have been convicted. I guess they're always innocent. But anyway, following that, he was taken to a state prison, the Minnesota Correctional Facility, Oak Park Heights, to await sentencing. There, he was placed in an administrative control unit, a housing unit that is separated from the general population for his own safety. Seems like a good call, considering America and the police and all that. Anyway, he's going to be sentenced in 8 weeks, so around the second week of June. And we don't know, JR, exactly how many years he's going to get, but second degree murder carries a maximum sentence of 40 years in prison. Third degree murder is punishable by up to 25 years, and second degree manslaughter is punishable by up to 10 years in prison. So, appeals notwithstanding and all of that, he does look like he faces at least a good number of years.
Yeah, there's gonna be something. And also, I saw, I don't wanna misquote her, it may have been Adrian Lawrence, one of our legal folks who's very proficient on all this stuff. So I apologize if it wasn't her, but I thought it was her that tweeted out and pointed out that this particular judge in this is gonna be up for re-election. And this is the sad part about it. He's gonna be up for re-election soon enough that wherever the sentencing he decides to go with on this could affect, you know, his re-election.
Sure.
In this particular state to stay in his position. So he may be thinking, yeah, I wanna make sure enough voters like me enough, so I may go ahead and throw the book at this guy, rather than what many people would have assumed would happen, especially within our justice system here, was, you know, let him off with as little as possible, but by still trying to show some level of punishment since he was convicted. So we'll see where he lands. And you know, if maybe he goes full boat from the way many people want as far as the sentencing goes, it may be because of his political ambitions or his ambitions for keeping his position as a judge there. But again, some people may see that and go, oh man, good, I mean, he's gonna go after him. But doesn't that suck that the potential for him doing something right and normal with the sentencing may be based off of career ambitions?
Exactly.
Instead of just the right thing. Again, this is all speculation, but if it goes that direction, we have to understand all the factors that could come into this type of decision.
Yeah, it's just election of judges is just weird. It's so weird. Anyway, but so that's looking forward some of the potential consequences. You know, Jared, do you want to talk generally about the? About yesterday.
Oh yeah, we can go either way. We can go through it all. Totally.
I mean, like, I know a lot of people are just.
Yeah.
So what did you think? What were your expectations, and what did you think when it was announced?
Honestly, so really in my heart, I figured he'd be convicted on everything. Okay. I wasn't going, oh my God, but it wasn't lost on me of our history. And wasn't lost to me that the fact that you gave the actual number, that what, 7 officers that have been involved in murders over the past however many thousands, tens of thousands of cases.
16 years, 7.
So you can't ignore that blatant history and those facts. So the assumption may be, hey, is this gonna be one of the other 16,000? Or is this gonna be one of the under 10, you know? Yeah. So there's the possibility, but the fact that this was such as big of a case as it was, and people, their eyes were on it since it happened, and for the whole summer is one of the things that sparked all of the protests, which again, people keep pointing out, and this is people that were in agreement to it and people that were against the protests that sparked last summer. People were thinking it's about just this one particular case with Floyd, but this is because of the other 16,000 cases just in the past, in the past 16 years, those thousands and thousands of cases. But this goes past the past 16 years. This goes from the beginning of policing and beginning of the way that they do this. This is a tradition. So this is, the pushback was against the tradition of blatantly, quickly just killing folks in front of a crowd that's filming you, and actually having that kind of nerve to be like, yep, I'm gonna go to trial and I'm gonna say not guilty. And just walk right in and expect the best for himself. Because that's the way it's worked before. You can't blame him, can you? Sure. What you supposed to do, not trust the system? They always say to trust the American system. The American system has told him many times, hey, cops have this level of immunity that they can do all these things and say, oh, I'm sorry, I thought I was in fear of my life. And you get off because that's the way it works. Yeah. And in the times that it doesn't work that way, yeah, he's gonna be surprised. He's gonna go, wait a second, I'm still a cop, right? Wait, I killed a black guy, right? This is supposed to just kind of get swept under the rug like it always does. What's wrong with you guys? You know, it's this alternate reality that we've been living under and we've accepted. And then when correct things happen, it's a bit of a surprise, even for the folks who want it to happen that way.
Exactly. Yeah. And that reaction, that like shocked, wait, this isn't how it's supposed to work. He's supposed to get off. Definitely the right wing is feeling that. And we're gonna be giving some of their responses in a bit. But yeah, that 7 police officers thing is pretty crazy. And it's not difficult to speculate about how easily this could have been, it could have stayed at 7, or I guess 6. You know, if not for all of the protests and the media attention, maybe he would have gotten off. If not for the video, definitely he would have gotten off. Without the video, even if you had the description, it wouldn't have been enough. And many people were sharing yesterday, JR, I'm sure you saw this, the original statement put out by the police. Did you see that?
After
Floyd died? It was like this write-up from the police, and it was a man dies following medical issue. And that's all it was.
Yeah, yeah.
There was nothing about the knee.
Oh yeah.
No indication of any of that. If that had been it, if the apparently there was a teen girl who filmed it, I believe. Mm-hmm. If she hadn't done that, done. He's an innocent man as far as the system is concerned. So anyway, yeah, it's just
the reason that they say that girl was a hero is because think about the many times that people are filming and you've seen these recordings, and then cops aggressively shove people away, stand in front of their cameras as the events are happening. And if that's your protocol to generally basically literally surround, circle the wagons and block any kind of filming from happening, it means you don't want the public to know what's happening inside of that barrier that you've created.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, we are about to launch into some responses from a variety of actors. But before that, I do want to touch base with the audience because we're going to be in that swamp for a bit. So let's see. Oh, by the way, we were talking about the sentencing. How many years do you think he's going to get? We've talked a bit about it, but we have a poll available at tyt.com/polls. You can go to this particular poll. We have a few categories: less than 5 years, 5 to 10, more than 10. Sometimes I have a good idea of what the results are going to be. In this case, I'm not so sure, but go to tyt.com/polls/Chauvin-sentence. You can vote in that poll, and near the end of the episode today, we'll give you those results. We'll see what y'all think. That said, first super chat today is Peter Hanby, who says, each time I see J.R. Jackson in a vintage Packers cap, I keep questioning if he's a pure California cheesehead and if others like Cenk is too. I didn't know that's what that was.
California cheeseheads?
I guess. Yeah. I guess. Julie Adams, thank you for your super chat. Siren Owen says, artwork dragon here. What's up, Dragon Daddy and JR? It's my birthday weekend and I'm hoping for a shout out. 25 with 25 plus years experience. Happy birthday, Siren Owen.
Lots free of
spirit dragon, mama. Exactly. Says, I love hump day with JR and Dragon Daddy. I was out yesterday for 420, but I'm back now. Justice finally prevails. Hope you got the package I sent. Send me a pic of the belt when you get a chance. So I didn't yet. Dave brought some packages actually in the pre-show this morning. I showed a few things that people had sent. I did not see that yet, but maybe it just didn't quite get in there before he got to the place. But I will be on the lookout for it. Thank you in advance. Alan Addison says, as a Canadian, the election of judges always baffles me. Same for me too. Pretty much everything about the way our judges work, are brought in, how long they stay, it's a disaster. But it does produce a certain outcome. It's not an accident that it's the way it is. Post Datist gifted a tier one sub. Thank you so much for that. Tell me what to put, gifted one as well. Thank you. Kelly June gifted one. Thank you so much. Very nice of you. And the only Dragon Allegra. Hey, only Dragon Allegra. How's it going? Just reached 9 months of being a subscriber. That's awesome. Inked Betty Gaming reached 6. Sharzen reached 7. Thank you. In the Twitch chat, Cypher Shadow Dragon says, hi, dragons. Just super nauseated from my shot, but it's not horrible. Mom is just really 30, thankfully. Interesting. Well, you know, I hope that you feel better. I'm not exactly sure what the last sentence means.
Yeah,
I'm assuming it's part of a conversation, but okay. Let's see. Maria Hall says, the shocked look on his face when the verdict was read was enough to let you know that he genuinely assumed he would walk. That whole thing was very weird watching his face.
Yeah, I couldn't read it very well. There's a lot of people, not a lot, but I've seen a few people saying they're reading what his eyes were saying. I'm not good at that stuff. I was like, I wonder what he's thinking. And I was looking at his eyes for the only thing you could look for. I don't know.
They just seemed like empty, like there was something wrong with him. I mean, this isn't the first piece of evidence that there's something wrong with him, but yeah. Okay, with that, oh God, we're gonna do this thing. Where do we start? Okay. Derek Chauvin being found guilty on multiple charges led to a feeling of sort of mixed relief for most people, I think. It's complex, certainly. For others, not so complex, and no relief was had. I apologize in advance, but I'm going to show you some of yesterday's, last night's Tucker Carlson monologue. Here he is on what he thinks the sentencing actually shows.
The jury in the Derek Chauvin trial came to a unanimous and unequivocal verdict this afternoon. Please don't hurt us. No politician or media figure has the right to intimidate a jury. And no political party has the right to impose a different standard of justice on its own supporters.
Okay. So they only pronounced him guilty because they were afraid of being murdered. He translated for us, which is helpful. Yeah. His audience prefers that he makes things very simple for them, or at least that's what he thinks of his audience, clearly, with how condescending it regularly is. So JR, no politician gets to do whatever. No mob has a right to destroy our cities, which is ironic because I actually remember a mob trying to destroy a city, if we could go to that, that Ben shared. The weird thing was, he actually didn't have a problem with that one. And it's weird because he also said, you don't get to, as a party, have a different standard of justice for your own people.
Weird.
And it's weird, he did months of shows complaining that the rioters were being treated too harshly, that they didn't do anything wrong. They're not white supremacists. Come on, lay off. Those are our people. Don't be so hard on them. It's almost like he's a hypocrite, JR.
Well, like that. This is what's expected. That's the way it's gonna go. The anger and the frustration over the right thing to happen here is just gonna boil over. But the next thought is never said. This is the way it always works. I feel like I always repeat this, and I'm sorry. But the next thought is never said. So what is it that you wanted to happen here? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you wanted him to be released. You wanted him to be acquitted. On what grounds? So who killed him? Who killed George Floyd? How did he die? We went through all that in the trial, but we already know that Tucker doesn't care about looking into the information before he makes any of his opinions. So if you look into what was said in the trial, which I didn't watch any of the trial, but I just read a little cursory notes, but you know that I did find out. And the thing is, you can look further and actually know, or you can do the surface thing that I did. And here they specifically pointed out, from medical examiners to professionals, about what happened to this person's body. He was killed.
Yep.
He was asphyxiated. Someone stopped the flow of oxygen through his body and he passed away. I don't know what else we can point out after we watched who did that act for that long unnecessarily. But what else could you want? So you want cops to be able to do this over and over and over and over and over again. I'm sorry. You want cops to continue to be able to do this over and over and over again, because this is not new. It's just, it's on tape. And then everyone in the world was watching. That's the difference here. Just like Rodney King, there was a tape and everyone in the world was watching. Except they didn't come to the conclusion that everyone saw in front of their eyes with the tape. Their frustration is that, man, this is supposed to be another Rodney King. We see the evidence in front of us and we tell black people, F you. That's what we do. And he's mad that we're not doing it this one time.
Well, yeah, and look, you mentioned the evidence that came out. You know, if I were, you know, the host of you know, a huge show with a massive audience, and you know, I'd been saying that it was totally not related to the neck thing, against all of the evidence and common sense, yeah, I'd probably want to say something about that. But he's found a way to be silent about that, and he's been doing that up until very recently. Now, I don't know what most of these commentators we're going to talk about actually wanted to happen. A lot of them in advance of it over the past few months have been saying, oh no, clearly he's a bad apple and what he did is bad. But let's talk about something else. Even those who wanted to sort of get cred for being reasonable and saying, well, yeah, no, clearly this guy killed someone, were all like weirdly like temperamental yesterday. We'll turn to that in a few. But when we're talking about people who are temperamental, understand that Tucker Carlson, a guy who usually has absolutely no emotion in his face and doesn't seem to care about any of this, and why would he? He's fabulously wealthy. He did get really frustrated with a guest last night when the guest actually said that the force was excessive, you know, because it was obviously. This is how Tucker responded.
The scene. I just think that it was excessive and it shouldn't happen. And what I'd like to say,
the guy who did it looks like he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison. So I'm kind of more worried about the rest of the country, which, thanks to police inaction, in case you haven't noticed, is like boarded up. So that's more my concern. But I appreciate you coming on, Ed Gavin. Thank you. Nope, done. Thank you.
Can anyone check on Tucker? Maybe a member of his staff, you know, his home staff. I mean, I'm sure he's got servants. What was that? So he seemed to get that Chauvin had done something wrong, but I'm kind of more worried about the rest of the country. He's gonna spend the rest of his life in jail. So he's worried about injustice, seemingly. I'm reading from his face, he thinks it was an injustice that a person who killed another person would go to jail. And that's boarded up. I don't know what was that selling a joke? Was that he's clearly angry there?
Yeah.
He cut off the mic, which is what, you know, a person who's really confident in their opinions, who brought on a guest who, it's not like the guy was ranting and raving or swearing or saying something crazy. The guy said it was excessive force. Well, he just got convicted of multiple murder charges. It is sort of objectively true at this point that it was excessive from the point of view of the jury. And he lost it, JR. He absolutely lost it.
Lost his mind. So this, and again, they keep talking about how, you know, folks that were in support of this verdict, oh, they were gonna go rioting in the streets. They're rabid, they're violent, they're angry. What's going on right here? There's so much anger based off of a verdict that was the most obvious black or white case you could ever see in front of you. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter because there's been a condition. You've been conditioned to believe this is the way things are supposed to go. So now they've lost a little bit of faith in their form of justice system. They're like, wait a second, accountability for police officers who murder people in front of a crowd? Or hopefully, well, maybe we'll get to the point where there's accountability for officers who murder people in the middle of the night and isolated. Maybe we'll get there one day too, Tucker. I know we're upset about the obvious cases. And maybe we can get upset about the less obvious cases later. It's boiling over, it's seething. The little laugh is like a release of frustration. Like, maybe he's gonna cuss on air. Maybe he can't take it anymore. So he has to But that's, I don't know if that's a winning argument.
I don't know.
I don't know. Usually you may laugh or cackle after you think you just nailed somebody. Be like, what do you think now?
That's true. Yeah, and look, I actually kind of, I found the cackle to be interesting because generally my view of Tucker Carlson is that much of his most explicit racist positions and quotes are performative. They're designed to please his racist audience and bring in more racists to watch his show. But and the idea there is that he's just a rich guy. Why would he be so passionate about this? But he'll play it up for the audience. But there, no, he seems to actually be really angry that cops sometimes can't get away with murder. 7 times in 16 years can't get away from murder. That is enough to actually enrage him. So that's good. I like that. I like that his racism is more honest than I thought it was. I thought it was just purely awfully performative. No, he's actually driven by racial animus. That's a good lesson to learn.
Yeah, no, actually, you know what? That is the surprising part. Not surprising that he's a pure racist, just that that it wasn't contained within his script and his writing.
Sure.
His racist writers, the only one that he got rid of.
Unless that cackle was actually in the script, we'll have to check. So let's turn to others. One would think with how obvious the footage of the murder of George Floyd was that you couldn't really be like shocked that it was declared murder by a judge. You should be pleased that the system actually worked, especially for many right wingers who say that they're law and order. Like, this is how the system is supposed to work, but they're really like mad yesterday. I'm not gonna show you Shapiro's tweets, but he was like really like snippy in that pathetic way that he can be. Yeah. Like, he's really mad that things didn't work out the way he wanted. But I'm not gonna show it because I can't take it right now. But we do have Tommy Lauren, who tweeted a couple of really, like, I can't say the word, but it starts with S and ends with itty. Really like those sort of comments, you know? So she tweeted, is the Foot Locker safe tonight? Should be, right? Justice, right? No need to steal the name of George Floyd anymore, right? You got your justice. So you got your we got our justice. A murderer is going to jail. You should be happy about that, but you're not. It's weird, but that's a problem for you to deal with. So there should be peace in Minneapolis tonight. No rioting, no looting, no harassing officers. Well, okay, there wasn't rioting and looting. So are you gonna do a follow up to that? Like, you were sort of saying, you're still gonna do it, aren't you? But no, yep. Nobody did that. So have you learned as a result of that? You certainly aren't saying anything as a result of that. That's weird, JR.
It's an odd thing. No, actually, it's not. So the Foot Locker reference, and then you're gonna do it anyway. Mm-hmm. This is keeping the foot on the gas for the generalizations about the folks that they've been telling their supporters to hate. So no matter what happens, no matter how open and blatant this is, no matter how obviously easy this conviction was, they still have to go back at the end and paint the folks that are in favor of what just of the the guilty verdict as looters and rioters and Foot Locker break-in, two people. So what picture comes in your head when you say the Foot Locker is still safe? Hey, they're gonna go out there and be violent anyway. All that stuff is to make sure that it's still kept in the back of the MAGA's heads. Hey, but those folks, they always riot. Even when it doesn't happen, they always riot. Just like they're always stealing. You know, if they come to the store, if their hands are in their pockets, they must have something in it. If they're confronted by police, they must have a gun. Hey, if I confront them and I use any kind of force on them, they must be superhuman. They must be up to something. They must have some drugs on them. They must have broken the law at some point. Let's pull them over anyway. All of those things go into the psyche for why we have these types of confrontations. You think police officers don't watch Fox News? You think police officers don't listen to Tommy Lahren? You think they're not on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook listening to the racist, rabid rhetoric that's happening? Yep. It fuels them. Police officers are just other members of society, then clock in and put a gun on their hip and have the authority to then carry out their biases. They're not some random robots that are put in this position to then carry out justice in the streets. They're humans in this country that is seriously racially divided and gives credence to racists. It does. It's always given support and it's given comfort to racists. So if you are one and we've given you a job where you get to hold a gun on your hip and carry out your biases, we allow it to happen. That's the way we've always run this. They're just other humans. So you think people like Tommy Lahren then continuing to say, well, did they riot tonight? Where's the Foot Locker at? You think cops and people in authority of all positions, from judges and prosecutors and defense attorneys, all that, aren't hearing that? And many of them agree with her? They do. They do. And these are the people that we're trusting our justice system with to carry out justice for real people. That's why it hasn't worked.
Or maybe it's just a few bad apples. Anyway, okay, let's turn to something slightly different. The world is not going to be shocked that the right-wing responses to Derek Chauvin's convictions were awful. There were others, though, that I think perhaps we would have thought we could have higher expectations for. Some were concise and bad, really, really bad, and they should take them down. One that we're going to show you was taken down, the other was not. You get to decide which. The Las Vegas Raiders tweeted, "I can breathe for 2021. No, don't do that.
That one's a problem.
That one's still up.
So this is one of those things. This is one of those things where, then it's, I'm in the middle because I'm a softie on this type of stuff. Because I look straight to what that entity's intent was.
Yeah.
It's like they're trying to support, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that we have to be okay with this, right? You know, so it's always either, what were you thinking, Raiders? How dare you? What are you trying to do? And I get that, because I thought that at first too. But then after that, I was like, oh, well, they were trying something, they just missed it. These are those moments when you start consulting with people who maybe are connected to the community that you're trying to appeal to. This is why diversity is a thing. Now, maybe they even have diversity. I'm not accusing them of not having diversity within their social media team. But whoever did go about this missed, they dropped the ball. And their finger was not on the pulse. But this is why you get people who are in positions where they can, maybe this gets run across someone and they go, because again, if I was part of the organization and I saw this tweet about to go off, I'd be like, who wrote this? Maybe we shouldn't do this, you guys. Mm-hmm. Just a suggestion.
Yeah. Just anything other than that. Like,
you need input,
and it's not just a tweet, it's a graphic. Like, they ask someone to make the graphic, and then they put the graphic up. Don't do that. They weren't the only ones. David Axelrod tweeted, and for now a nation can breathe finally again. He took that one down at least. And like JR said, I get that you are trying to express a good thought. You just didn't think before expressing the thought. So yeah. I don't know, try a little bit harder there.
By the way, for anyone who's missing it, I'm not sure if there's anyone who is, but the issue is that obviously those are George Floyd's multiple times last words.
Yeah.
And we're using that for no slogan later. You don't want to sloganize someone dying tragically. That's the whole point. In case anyone's missing it, that would have been the explanation that your person who sees what's going on may have said to you in the meeting in the Vegas Raiders social media team. Hey, you guys, let's not sloganize a brutal murder that was caught on camera that has sparked protests and riots all across the world. Maybe we shouldn't do that because it kind of looks like we're being insensitive. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I don't know. I just imagine like whoever asked for it or made it saying, I can breathe. I'm like, okay, yeah, no, you can. He still can't. He still died. Like, so let's put things in perspective. Yesterday could have been worse, but in the ways that we most would have wanted it to be better, it can't be because he can never come back. So let's just bear that in mind. There are potentially even worse ways to express what's supposed to be a positive bit of support for the verdict. And we really should be able to, if you can't expect more from a football team, social media team, you at least should be able to speak more or expect more from the speaker. When they speak, it's their title, the speaker. They should be good at doing that one thing. But here is Nancy Pelosi's initial response to the verdict.
Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice, for being there to call out to your mom. How heartbreaking was that? Call out for your mom. I can't breathe. But because of you and because of thousands, millions of people around the world who came out for justice, your name will always be synonymous with justice.
JR? I get that she wants to be positive. That was bad.
Jesus sacrificed his life. Let's go to the religious turn of this. Jesus sacrificed his life so that you and I, if we believe in him as his only begotten, as God's only begotten son, will be accepted into his eternal kingdom. Mm-hmm. That's who sacrificed their life, right? Because that was according to the Bible by choice. He's gonna allow them to do this because he is the son of God. He doesn't have to let anybody do anything to him. George Floyd wasn't in control of that situation. George Floyd didn't wake up that morning and say, hey, you guys, you know what? I'm gonna sacrifice my life today for justice. And you know what? People are gonna remember me. No, he would like to be living right now. He would like to still be with his family. His family misses him. But he didn't go and sacrifice his life for the pursuit of justice, which by the way, has not been found yet. We're still pursuing that. We got one cop that killed him, and we haven't got the rest of the George Floyds that have been murdered that sacrificed their lives for justice. Did they sacrifice their lives for justice? Or is this just a chance for you to get in front of camera and talk about how wonderful this is, that what just happened? None of this is wonderful. You know what justice would have been? Justice would have been if the cop rolled up on George Floyd and said, what's the situation? What's going on? Whatever it is they got called for, you straighten it out and George Floyd goes home. Or maybe you take him in for whatever it is that you had him up for and he spends a day in jail and goes home. I don't know what all the back and forth were, because I don't care, because they murdered him unnecessarily. Yeah. So this is not a matter of George Floyd sacrificing himself for your political stance and your photo op and your I don't know. This turned into almost a sermon. Like, you know, we thank God for what George Floyd did, and you're helping. No, he's not here to help us. He wasn't here to try to remedy us of all of our problems with our justice system. He was going about his day. Black folks are not, their lives are not the purpose of their lives are not to be used to pursue anything else or to push this next thing. Anytime we have a murdered child, that we have to now have some law around. I think it was Megan's Law was one of them. I think that was one of those. It was named after a victimized child. We don't say, I want to thank the 7-year-old child who was brutally murdered. Thank you for sacrificing your life. Think about it. Put yourself in the same position as these folks, and then you'll find the sensitivities that you're supposed to have. We keep missing. Just put yourself in their positions. We have a hard time putting ourselves in a position of black people. We just do, because we don't connect to them.
Like, it's the.
I'm sorry, did
the Parkland kids sacrifice themselves? Like, people who die in wildfires, do they sacrifice themselves for some sort of sane climate policy? No, they were killed. That's the kind of tragedy it is. And for me, at least, what bothers me is not just that it's a bad statement. Like, for instance, the Raiders had a bad statement. The Raiders can't pass legislation. Pelosi is the Speaker of the House. So when I see you at a podium talking about a person sacrificing themselves as if they made a conscious effort to accomplish a political end, and you're just watching it play out, you're the leader of the House of Representatives. You don't need to just watch stuff play out. You could actually pass something. You could make it a national focus. You could put pressure on Biden. You could do something. So he didn't sacrifice himself. It's really weird that you said he did, but people shouldn't have to sacrifice themselves for criminal justice reform, for a sane environmental policy, for gun control, for any of this. We shouldn't have to sacrifice ourselves. We elect you to do your job. Why should we die to take some of the pressure off of you because you don't want to like go against a powerful lobby or something? Why don't you sacrifice yourself? Not your life. Sacrifice a few donors that you might have. Sacrifice some of your political ambitions to actually deliver. And this isn't just to Pelosi, this is to all of them. This is to mayors and governors and Biden himself, senators, people who don't do their job, but love to like talk about the activists. Oh, you guys go off and do something. Don't we love the sunrise? Yeah, no, love them and help them. Help them to actually accomplish their goals. You're not supposed to be a spectator for this thing. You're supposed to be a leader. And Pelosi is literally the leader in the House of all of the Democrats. God, that was such a stupid statement from her.
Anyway. Just, you know, it's if she said nothing yesterday, I don't know, maybe some people would have been upset. It would have been okay if you don't say anything.
Sure.
You know, yeah. And by the way, just because it's a bit of a side note, Axios reported that there's some senior Democratic and Republican aides that pointed out that they're relieved of the verdict because it lessens their pressure on them to pass any kind of legislation that will fix the policing problem.
No.
Axios, I'm gonna read it directly. You know, Axios has their little pieces, the fragmented stories. So this is where they put it. Senior Democratic and Republican aides who would never have let their bosses say this on the record privately told Axios that the convictions have lessened pressure for change.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Because you know,
after all, he sacrificed himself. Why should you have to do anything? Why should you have to type out something and sign it?
Because it's now a political win, because now George Floyd has sacrificed himself. And before George Floyd died, by the way, there was tons of other George Floyds that died and quote sacrificed themselves for the pursuit of justice, except we didn't get there. And we're still not there. And apparently your aides don't want to get there either. So there's gonna be another George Floyd. And in fact, there was another George Floyd the same day.
Yep. Oh no, we're gonna get to it. We're not gonna get to much today because we've got a lot to say about this. We're gonna get to that.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Let's turn to a positive one, just briefly. I was gonna skip this, but we're gonna turn to a more positive response. We've heard horrible responses to the Chauvin results, both from the right and from whatever Nancy Pelosi and the Raiders are. But what if it was positive and productive? What if you were not, as JR is saying, Axios is reporting, relieved about him getting some jail time potentially so that you don't have to do anything? What if you actually wanted to do something? Well, here are some politicians who actually feel like we should do something. So Representative Ocasio-Cortez says that a family had to lose a son, brother, and father, that a teenage girl had to film and post a murder, that millions across the country had to organize and march just for George Floyd to be seen and valued is not justice. And this verdict is not a substitute for policy change. Now, This is a complex problem. Many politicians kind of dim are going to say, what can we possibly do? Well, there are people who have some ideas though. Representative Ilhan Omar actually had a great tweet thread of a few things that you could actually do that'd be more productive than just giving a speech. Ilhan said, this is but a minuscule step on the path to justice. Next stops, independent agency to investigate police misuse of force rather than literally having internal affairs of police departments do it when they're out donating to Kyle Rittenhouse. Criminalize violence against protesters, demilitarize police departments, disband and deconstruct failed police departments, and traffic stops for minor equipment violations. Federal investigations in departments who utilize practices like arrest quotas, end the school to prison pipeline, ban all racial profiling by federal, state, and local agencies, legalize recreational cannabis nationwide, expunge the records and seek amnesty for those incarcerated for cannabis related offenses, restore felon voting rights, ensure that formerly incarcerated individuals are fully supported in their transition back to society, end mandatory minimum sentencing laws for low level offenses, invest in a public health approach to the addiction crisis. Many people in response to this great list pointed out also end qualified immunity, to which Representative Ayanna Pressley responded, absolutely. I introduced a bill to end qualified immunity and Ilhan Omar is a co-sponsor. Those are all things that our government could actually do, that Nancy Pelosi could personally champion. Those are all solutions that would make the world or our country objectively better and safer. It would result in the cops not having to be trained into a position of constant anxiety and lust for violence. Those are all amazing solutions. And I expect that we will probably hear much less from our political leaders in this area than vague and often poorly thought out positive feelings, and that's about it.
Yeah, so this is just one, this list that Ilhan Omar tweeted out. I mean, it's a little too long. It's longer than the defund the police that everyone is so mad about. That one line. This is what the one line means, in part, because this is some aspects of what all needs to be done in order to end what we see in front of us. So if you want to end what we see in front of us, you would pay attention to what it is that people are proposing and think about it rather than just going, yes, why to get rid of cops. Is that what they said or did you read? I mean, I know they read everything else that Ilhan Omar writes that they want to openly and blatantly disagree with and then point out how horrifically socialist she is. You've already proven you can read her tweets. Did you read these? What issues do you have with these particular aspects or these factors that they want to change? Why is it you want to keep qualified immunity? Do you want to keep qualified immunity? Do you know that they have it? I wonder how many people who are in support of the cops realize that they have this provision where they can just, they have this mindset where they can say, I thought the cell phone was a gun, my bad.
Yep.
What other profession can you do that in? Can you do that when you work at Subway and get paid $7 an hour? Oh, my bad. I thought I was supposed to take all of the meat home with me.
Oh well, I guess it's mine now. No, we have much higher expectations for sandwich artists than we do for the people we allow to recklessly kill people around the country. Okay, let's see what's going on in the audience and then we're gonna take stock and figure out what we should skip to. It's looking like the E block is not gonna happen, just an early heads up.
Yeah, John, I'm sorry that I didn't tell you this before. I am absolute hard out at 11.
Oh yeah? Okay, well then here's what we're gonna do to the producer. We're gonna go to the D block, then we're gonna go to the F block, and we'll see after that what we have time to get to, okay? We're gonna skip to the D block, then the F block. Okay, so to the audience though, Zanny Dragon says, I feel like they should leave him out in GP for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I feel like maybe he'd see how long that really is, see how long he could hold his breath. Zanny, I like the rhetorical point that you're making. Obviously, we don't advocate for, you know, allowing him to be killed. But yes, he would be very scared in that situation, rightfully so. Grandma Dragon says, I was wondering how much of the problems with policing in the US has to do with quotas. If cops have to make a certain number of arrests, don't they just randomly arrest black and brown people? I mean, that's sort of what Representative Omar was getting to with some of that. That's arrest quotas, that's madness, just madness. But it produces the outcome that they want. Julie Adams says, it's my second pandemic birthday and I'm here to say that a shout out from John and JR would make my day. Is Sprocket in the house? Let's see him too, because I love dogs and today I'm 32. I don't know about Sprocket, Julie, but happy birthday.
Sprocket is usually in the other room while I do these things, unless he sneaks out.
Jackson Kissling says both judicial elections and appointments are problematic. They should select judges at random from a pool of lawyers. Just a thought, love arbitrary dragon. I don't like that either. I don't like any of the ways. Mary Hookermeyer says that's what happens when there isn't a script for Tucker to read. Yeah, no, I mean, generally he just does the blank stare at people. That's, he's not as smart as he wants you to believe, I guess. Lazy Peon says, she just said thank you for getting murdered so your killer can be punished. Yeah, kind of, that's awful. Lawrence Wells says, smile slowly grows on my face to hear that so many pundits are hot and bothered by the verdict. There's so much more to do on this ahead, but yesterday's the first step in the right direction. Yes. By the way, I saw, I guess it was a comment from Jess Ortega. Happy birthday. Sorry if I didn't say it on the show yesterday, but happy birthday. Edwin is embarrassed as a Raiders fan. For the Raiders tweet.
Yeah, like, it is a thing. Some people are like, you know, are think it's a little petty to come after Nancy Pelosi for her little statement. And I honestly, I have less problem with the Raiders than I do with Pelosi. You know, she's an elected official. Definitely. She's, this is more benefiting to her to try and come out and make this kind of statement. And maybe it was, you know, maybe it was tone deaf and she didn't realize it. Just like when they all knelt with the kente cloth masks and head scarves on, that was absolutely cringy. So, you know, they do these things. This is what politicians do. They should start consulting with other folks though, just like the Raiders should have. But, you know, I don't know. The Raiders stuff annoyed me. It's where the limit kind of hit for me. But I get if other people more upset. That's just, that's your prerogative.
Sure, sure. I mean, Pelosi's, I hate her comments more and the context of a person saying that who has so much, at least potential power to influence this in the future.
Yeah, the Raiders looked dumb.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not like the players wrote it. It was someone right in the team, but not a player. We're the Northern Dragon, subscribe for 3 months. Thank you for that, appreciate it. A Bizarro World, subscribe for 4 months. Thank you. Genevieve for 2 months. Thank you so much. Xander, subscribe for 4 months. The Amazing Andrew for 3. And Prismenalog for 2 months. Says Tucker Carlson Foolishness Edition. That's just the regular edition though, I think. Okay, with that, let's jump into this next story. We're gonna see what we can do. Politics is filled recently with people who are there seemingly just to troll, okay? People like Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Greene and others, they're there to bother the other side. We've sort of gotten used to that. It is weird though to have a politician who seems to just be here to troll their own side. And that's really all that Kyrsten Sinema is. So you might recall she did her little photo with the F off to the camera, which is really weird considering who's been criticizing her, who should be telling F off. Well, she also tweeted this yesterday. April marks Financial Literacy Month. Check out these 30 tips for financial wellness. I haven't clicked on the link yet, but I wonder if one of them is getting paid more. No? And you stopped people from getting paid more? Well, then my response to your tweet looks like this. It's just convenient to have it. Because not only does it show that I'm against it, but it shows that I don't think much of you either, like you said to all of your constituents with that. JR, that's gotta be spitting in our face over the minimum wage thing, right? Like she is definitely trolling
with the
her
30
own
tips?
Side who wants change.
The 30 tips for financial freedoms?
Financial literacy?
Well, okay. It could be one of those side note things where she's like, well, I said F you on your minimum wage hike, but there's other ways that you can go around and virtually pull up your bootstraps. So the whole point of the bootstraps is like, take what you've got and make it better. So the mindset, and maybe she's thinking this in all honesty. Yeah, go ahead, work with that $7 an hour. But you know what you can do with that $7 an hour? If you follow these tips, you can turn that $7 an hour into $100 million. Like, it seems like one of those like late night infomercials where they're trying to sell some kind of pyramid scheme. Here's 30 tips on how you can make all kinds of money. Just give us your email address, phone number, social security number, address, and bank account info, and we'll get you $1 million. So like, what are these 30 tips? These 30 tips for managing your money if you had some? Or maybe if you got paid for the work that you do. I don't know. I feel like it was more tone deaf than it was trolling, but also those things are all kind of melting together lately anyway.
Yeah, maybe I'm being too hard. So if Senator Sinema is watching this or a member of their staff, I will say, regardless of what the tips are, and look, there's a lot that Americans should learn about money. We're not trained in school in any of this. I will say though, when you're making $7.25 an hour, you are desperately just trying to pay your bills. There's not much money left over for getting into money markets, looking into an IRA. Those are really not going to be possible with a $7.25. Hey, you know, if we could raise the minimum wage, then maybe more people would be able to exercise some of these tips. Wouldn't that be great? But I do have a couple of other updates. Remember yesterday we talked about how Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin were gonna be at the National Restaurant Association big lobby meeting where they're gonna give a speech and probably end up getting a lot of money from those lobbyists. Well, at that conference, she, who I will remind you, recently posted a photo of herself on Instagram wearing a ring that read F off, said it's important to treat people with respect. As she advised lobbyists in attendance, you always wanna be polite. That's what she is, polite, with the thumbs down and the F off. But there is one positive consequence of this. The company that makes the F off ring posted this on Instagram. All profits from the sales of our F off ring for the rest of the month will be donated to the National Employment Law Project, who fight to raise the federal minimum wage. We appreciate the attention brought to our work by the recent events with Kyrsten Sinema, and we want to put our money towards an organization that is fighting to protect workers and build systemic change. Jeez. You can follow them and donate directly to them too. Thanks for your support. If you're an Arizona resident, we hope you consider contacting Sinema directly at, and the information is all there.
Oh, you know
that I love.
I'd love to hear what your translation is of what that is, because I feel like you're on.
I mean, that is, hey, thanks, Kyrsten Sinema, for raising this. Now, everyone, let her know what you really think about this topic while we put your money into someone who's actually gonna fight to raise the minimum wage rather than actually block it. So, oh, I love it.
Yeah, and it was also like, hey, you guys are seeing our ring everywhere, but we did not mean it this way. We're just selling it for, you know, maybe some 16-year-old kid can wear it and have fun. But man, when Kyrsten Sinema made it a big thing, hey, don't come for us. Hey, here's her name and her address. Go talk to her.
Totally. Yeah, I don't know what else they make. I don't know if they make anything that'd be appropriate for the show, but hey, maybe we can do some sort of partnership, because I support raising the minimum wage too. And I like your style there, figuratively and literally. Anyway, okay, with that, I think that we should probably press on to our next and possibly last story. Whew. Okay, let's do it. You can't have one day in America without the police doing something absolutely awful. And so yesterday, while you know, the nation was rightfully focused on the outcome of the Derek Chauvin trial, right around the time that we were all waiting to find out what the verdict was gonna be, the police were involved in yet another killing. So Columbus police shot and killed a teenage girl who swung at two other people with a knife Tuesday, according to body cam footage from the officer who fired the shots just minutes before the verdict in George Floyd's killing was read. This is Makia Bryant. And the footage is out there. We're not going to play the footage. I've reached, at least recently and probably for the rest of my life, my limit on watching people being murdered by the police. It is there though. They almost instantly released the body cam footage. The cops getting a little bit more responsive with that sort of thing. But remember, don't protest. It can't produce anything good, like the cops actually feeling like they should be accountable for the things that they do. And as we said, the shooting happened about 25 minutes before a judge read the verdict convicting former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin of murder and manslaughter in the killing of George Floyd. It also took place less than 5 miles from where the funeral for Andre Hill, who was killed by another Columbus police officer in December, was held earlier this year. The officer in Hill's case, Adam Coy, a 19-year veteran of the force, is now facing trial for murder with the next hearing scheduled for April 28th. So lots of concurrent instances like this going on in America. As I said, we're not gonna show the video, but it shows it's a 10-second clip. They've only released 10 seconds. I don't know what else is in the other footage, but just bear that in mind. We do not have all of the footage. In any event, it begins with the officer getting out of his car at a house where police had been dispatched after someone, we're being told it was Makia Bryant that did it, called 911 saying they were being physically threatened. The officer takes a few steps towards a group of people in the driveway when the girl, who is black, starts swinging a knife wildly at another girl or woman who falls backward. The officer shouts several times to get down. The officer then fires 4 shots into this teenager's chest. 4 shots. There was nothing else that the police officer could have done except shooting to kill and shooting multiple times to kill to make sure that there was absolutely no chance that this teenager was not killed in this altercation. JR, like I said, it's not one day. The cops are, every cop in the country is worried about what's going to happen after the verdict. These cops are out there during this time, ready to pull their gun, to fire as many shots as necessary.
That's actually my question. Are all cops on pins and needles? Are they all actually paying attention to what's happening? Are they all looking for what's going to happen with the verdict and then somehow see some kind of connection to themselves? I'm sure some do. You know, they're humans. But then when you see something like this, it makes you wonder, wait, because it wasn't like he was jumping out angry. He was very calm. This was I watched it. He was very calm. And so it wasn't like he jumped out in this panic and this rage and was going and just looking to shoot his first person he saw. It was the most calm shooting of a person I've seen. It's just right away. Get down, get down, get down. As if they're all being held hostage and none of them are connected to her. Everybody get out of the way. I'm about to shoot the suspect. So, but the whole deterrent, the crime deterrent thing that we always like to talk about with our justice system, the reason why people believe in the death penalty is because they're like, oh man, if the death penalty was in place, people would think twice before they do something that could carry the death penalty as their sentence. If we believe that, then that means we should believe that maybe convicting, or at least, yeah, the conviction of Chauvin in this case would maybe send some shockwaves to other police officers. Hey, think about what you do before you do it, because there are consequences these days, sometimes. Apparently that message isn't reverberating through police forces across the country, because obviously it is in Ohio, and another thing happened in Minnesota. So I guess that's not close enough, or maybe the same police department that killed some other person however long ago, and this guy's facing murder, it's just not a nationwide case. Maybe that would shake you. Why does none of this shake them? That's the question.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, look, obviously, like as soon as they release the footage, they feel obviously that they have all the cover necessary. Do whatever you want. Shoot her 1,000 times. That's what the cops are going to feel. Every rioter in the country is going to agree. Did they have to? Is that the only way? Is that the only thing that you could do? There's no even like, I tried to use my taser, but whoops, I pulled my pistol. No, there was no attempt to use a taser. There's no attempt to tackle. There was nothing like that. It's just always so fast and so easy, and 4 shots to the chest.
There's no what was going on. Don't. There's no what's going on, you guys. There's no, hey, what's going on? We're here. We got a call. You know, all this stuff. It's just get down. I think you may have said what's going on once. What's happening? Get down, get down, get down, get down, get down.
Mm-hmm.
4 shots.
There was that I think it was last week, there was that footage. I don't think that we covered it on TDR, but there was the guy who like dragged the cop with his car.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are people that they can stop without killing. They do it all the time. Like basically every white terrorist, they stop without killing. Like they, in theory, can do it even if there is the risk of something. So in this case, there's the risk of something bad happening. There is. There's a risk of that in many of these cases. Sometimes they can make it happen with a taser or even without even needing to use their less lethal weapons. They can make it happen. In this case, though, it was shoot quickly, shoot multiple times, and that's it.
There's a you know, people, some folks that are in support of ending this kind of violence on citizens always say things like, you know, don't call the cops anymore. In policing, I think Rashida Tlaib said the other day. And people are like, oh, well, you'll see what happens when cops don't show up. This 15-year-old girl called the cops.
Yeah.
So if she listened, you know, to the suggestions that don't call the cops, because they're gonna come and kill you, she might be alive. Maybe she would have gotten to a fight with the person she was fighting with, and someone would have been injured badly. Yeah. Some right now, someone's dead. The person who called the cops, according to the story, is dead now. So the whole thing about, oh, what if the cops don't show up? You're gonna be sad then. The cops showed up. Who's sad? It happened anyway. So why is it beneficial to the victims, the broad victims of these types of crimes? Why is it beneficial for us to continue to want cops to show up? They're just another fighting force. If you're having a fight with someone and you call the cops, they're just a third member of the fight with lethal force and an itchy finger. So that does not chill out situations. That makes them worse. So no, we don't need cops showing up to domestic violence issues because they don't know how to handle domestic violence issues.
How many people have either they've died or the person they wanted to help died because they brought the cops in? It is very dangerous in America to bring the cops in a lot of cases. Really fast, so I do want to play this video because in terms of JR talking about it making it worse, here's an instance of something making it far worse. This is what happened around after the shooting. With residents gathered at the scene, this is what happened to the cops.
I happened to look out my front door, I saw that cop car, 9142 sitting out there.
On Legion out east. Yeah, so.
Blue lives matter. Crazy.
Yep.
An insult, especially at this place right now.
The cops are shouting, blue lives matter. After that, after the cops weren't even in danger. That's not even what this was about. So someone was theoretically in danger. The cops were not the ones. And it's the day of the Derek show. So maybe they are thinking about it. Maybe they're thinking about what's going on in other parts, thinking about how our lives are the most important thing. Even if somebody else is being threatened, it's somehow we're the victims here.
If best case scenario is lazy policing. It's just, hey, there's a bunch of folks that I don't care about fighting. Let me go fire off some shots. Who else could he possibly hit? There was another woman right next to her when he shot her.
Hit the other woman.
Literally right next to her when he shot her. And in a moving situation, not like everyone was standing and still in one place.
Yeah.
So again, the fact that you can go into there and not think, oh man, this could be a problem if I do this. That thought never entered his mind. There was no hesitation. You have hesitation when you rethink something. There's zero hesitation because there's no thought that there's gonna be any consequences for anything that I do. This gun is not a lethal weapon. This gun is just something to end the situation.
Yeah.
Who cares?
By the way,
you don't care about someone's life. You can end it and you can go back home and eat your steak dinner and literally not care.
One of the cops, by the way, had a Blue Lives Matter face mask. So shouting it out here is bad enough. Wanting to make sure that like all the people you interact with know what your priority is. That seems worse. Anyway, tragedy, obviously. But JR, I know that this is all the time that we have with you. Thank you as always for joining us. Appreciate you being here.
For sure. We'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, hopefully more positive news next week. But you know, we're still gonna be broadcasting from America, so probably not. Yeah. But anyway, have a good one, JR, if you can.
Jeez.
Okay, I'm gonna read a couple of super chats. We are going to at least do, let's say we'll go back to C block. We'll see what we can, is that okay? No, okay, we have time, we have 15 minutes. Okay, we're gonna give you a little bit more. But let's see what's going on over here in the audience. Gator Dragon says, I got my first Pfizer dose on Friday at a Walgreens 2 minutes from my house, Louisiana, not screwing up. Meanwhile, my little brother in Portland is a type 1 fragile diabetic postman and can't get it. Really, everybody in America 16 plus is supposed to be able to get it right now. Obviously, that is not the case. Amy Jarrell says, Minnesotan here, got notice this morning that the DOJ are going to investigate the Minneapolis Police Department. Yes, so we mentioned that in the pre-show, but yes, thank you for letting us know that. To see if there's a pattern of illegal behavior, hint, there is. Love the show, John is my favorite TYTer. Thank you so much, Amy. You're my favorite Amy, thank you. Tanya says, hi J&J, can I claim Delphi the punk rock dragon? I think that one's open. I think that you can have that one. As people are saying in the chat right now, postal workers should have been among the first to get vaccinated. That makes sense considering how many people they have to interact with. Totally. Daddy Dame says Nancy's speech sounded all a little Trumpian. Maybe. I mean, he would occasionally have really weird things like the whole choking thing. Remember? God, that's a weird throwback. The Sorry, I'm seeing in the chat people saying get wrecked other Amys. Hey, let's not start a war with the Amys, okay? Anyway, over on Twitch, Sorost, subscribed for the second month, says Habesh Dragon is now claimed. Shout me out, John. Consider yourself shouted out, Habesh Dragon. Thank you for that. Seth Ian Rosen says, one of my favorite things about TYT, the hosts have a normal range of emotions. I can't necessarily say that. I do have some, though. Pickerbell Pixie says, I watched a lot of the prosecution and the defense after they stopped showing video. The case was rock solid, but no one on right-wing media shows that, nor even talks about it. Like we said, before the Maxine Waters thing, Fox had talked about the case for all of 4 minutes in 3 weeks. So no, they just weren't interested. There was no spin they could put on it until that. Thank you, Tom Zawaki, for your tweet, by the way. I do appreciate that. Now, with that said, let's see if we can at least get through this one more story with the limited time that we have remaining. Kayleigh McEnany is paid to lie. She was paid to lie in government. Now she's paid to lie on Fox News. She's going to do that. I would at least hope that she would do a good job for the money, make the lies interesting, cloak them a bit. You know, half truths. Make the lie go down easier, but no, she's still pretty bad at it, despite the years of experience. Here is what she had to say in response to the Chauvin murder or Chauvin verdict being read yesterday.
The president himself weighs in. Look, I'm glad he at least waited until the jury was sequestered.
Right.
But I think that the country is such a tinderbox right now, especially in Minneapolis. There's so much hurt, so much pain. And I think it's the role of the president of the United States to stay back, to not inflame the tensions. I like that he called the family of George Floyd. President Trump did too. But it's such a tinderbox moment. And I think he should have just reserved comment and said he's praying for the family, as we all are.
Okay, so even having this religious Christian president praying in response to this thing, Fox found a way to have a problem with it. If you thought that that would somehow make it okay. No, the fact that he, like virtually every rational person in the country, can have looked at this case, looked at the trial, and have a preference, unacceptable. It's a tinderbox, back off. Politicians are not supposed to weigh in on these sorts of things. But it's weird because she actually represented someone that every once in a while would weigh in the most subtle and reasonable ways. For instance, when Trump said that an alleged New York City terrorist should get the death penalty. So he was kind of weighing in. No tinderbox there. No just thoughts and prayers there. He gets to call for the state murder of someone. Or for instance, when Trump repeatedly attacked an individual juror in the Roger Stone trial, right before she testified at a retrial hearing. Oh, that's not a tinderbox. That's not the president shouldn't weigh in. That's totally cool. Biden said, I'm praying for the right verdict. He wouldn't even say which verdict it was. That was how out of the fray he was staying. But Trump repeatedly attacking an individual juror in a trial for one of his buddies who himself had been intimidating jurors, that's totally okay. For instance, Trump repeatedly tweeted about Manafort's trial, putting pressure on the jurors, also putting pressure on Manafort, like talking about him not flipping like a rat. That's okay. That's totally not weighing in. I mean, that's just sort of getting involved. You wouldn't want to incite anything. You know, when there's a tinderbox like you might see in this image. Yes, Trump never inciting anything when political tensions are high. But of course, look, it's sort of fun to put these together. And you know, credit to Parker Malloy for finding some of the earlier things about the jurors. But of course, like, I'm sure she's smart enough to know this. She know who she represented. Every one of the jokers on that panel there knows that they loved when Trump opined on what was going on. If it's a legal thing, if it's about a social movement, they wanted him to do that. Right now, they love other politicians doing that. Their commentators are putting pressure on the jurors. On a platform with millions of viewers every night, they know that this is part of the game that they're playing. It is the Hypocrisy Network. It is designed to make their viewers feel comfortable in believing that their politicians should be involved. Their people should pressure people, should get out there, get confrontational. The other side, though, they should shut up. They should sit down. It's hypocrisy, but it's also really comfortable if you're a right winger. Anyway, I think that we have time to go into the E block. What do you think? We do it? I think we can do it. No? Okay, I don't necessarily know that I can be really fast. So unfortunately, we're gonna have to hold on. Man, the E block is gonna be punted down the road until tomorrow as well. But it is fun and we will eventually get to it. So with the little time that we have, why don't we touch base with the audience? We did a poll earlier to see how many years you think Derek Chauvin is likely to be sentenced for. And it looks like people are optimistic about the outcome. 57% of you thinking he will get more than 10 years. Looks like 32% believe he'll get between 5 and 10 years. And just 10% of you think he will get less than 5 years. And I'm assuming we didn't have a category for it'll be overturned, you won't get any time. But I assume those people are saying less than 5. So a little bit of optimism out there in the audience. And look, based on what he's been convicted for, it is entirely possible. Those are maximums we've focused on rather than minimums, but I think that there is a good chance. So it looks like the audience agrees and believes that that's the case. Okay, so with the little minute or two that we have left, I want to remind you again, Earth Day special tomorrow after the TYT post game. It's going to be awesome. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're working on that right now. So hopefully you're there and you take part and enjoy it. I want to thank everyone who supported the network with donating subs on Twitch, donating your bits and everything. And those of you who sent super chats and become members, we appreciate all of our YouTube members. Just yesterday, we did our monthly live Q&A for the tier 3 members. Had a lot of fun, talked about everything from video games to books and politics. There was some talk about Rand Paul. Is he a liar or is he stupid? We had a little debate there. That was fun. And on Monday for our tier 2 and tier 3 members, we did our top 10 list of Francesca and I's top 10 favorite comedians. So a lot of fun there. Thank you to everybody who signed up. With that said, in studio later today, I'm going to be joining Anna Kasparian for the first hour of the Young Turks. If all goes according to plan, can't wait to be in the studio with the Salt Dragon once again. You're not going to want to miss it. But until then, stay safe out there. Stay sane out there. I'll see you soon. Very excited to be joined on the show by our next guest, who is both a civil rights lawyer, the head of the University of Denver's Social Movement Support Lab, and the author of the book we're here to discuss, Rich Thanks to Racism. Jim Freeman, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me, John.
Very glad to have you here. People watching this are seeing an image of the book there. So how the ultra wealthy profit from racial injustice. And that is a topic that we occasionally talk about here on our show. You delve into multiple different ways that this manifests in America. So can you tell us a little bit about the origins of the book, why you decided to focus on this particular topic?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I stumbled onto it. You know, I've been a civil rights lawyer for a long time, working with communities of color across the US. I'm trying to address issues of systemic racism. And, you know, for most of that time, I really thought like our enemy was ignorance. You know, that's what I thought we were working against. And it was only because I was working across different cities and across different states, and I started to see these patterns emerging where our opposition kept being the same people. And so eventually I just, started following the money a little bit, digging into who was funding these organizations, what their ideology was. And I came to realize that we weren't all aligned in this idea of addressing systemic racism, that there was an opposition to this that usually worked in secret, behind the scenes. And that was deeply, deeply invested in preserving the systems and policies that were upholding systemic racism.
So tell me a little bit about some of those organizations who early on stood out as one that you would often butt up against in your work.
I mean, certainly, Alec, the American Legislative Exchange Council, I mean, that tends to be a pretty consistent thread throughout a lot of this work. And for those who don't know, Alec represents somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 very large corporations and has something around 2000 legislative members, mostly in state legislatures across the country. And they're extremely effective in getting their agenda across. And so they, around 1,000 of their model bills are introduced each year, and about 200 of them are passed into law. And they cover a range of topics, but a huge chunk of them, or a substantial chunk of them at least, really uphold or expand systemic racism. So they're one. But also in the book, I talk a lot about Charles Koch and his late brother and the other billionaires and multimillionaires that they've organized, and how they've poured, you know, tens of millions of dollars into think tanks and advocacy organizations and media outlets that have really been instrumental in making sure that we don't address some of these dynamics that have been really devastating for communities of color.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you focused on Alec. It's been a bit since we spoke about Alec on the show, but for people watching this that might not know, I mean, the model legislation that Jim's talking about there, like very often in multiple states, you'll have bills with either very similar or sometimes identical language being passed by representatives that arguably don't even necessarily know what's going on. They just know that they're supposed to pass this. And so, yeah, not surprised to see this popping up in multiple different nation areas, considering the number of different corporations that they represent. Now, in your book, you focus on a couple of different areas that I want to make sure that we talk about. So one has to do with the dismantling of the public school system. So tell us a little bit about how that works.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've been working for many years with communities that were. That we're really struggling with the effects of school privatizations, this expansion of charter schools and voucher programs, and the damage that was causing, in particular, closing down public schools. And so these were really traumatizing events for these communities. And then again, I started digging into who was funding this and kept running the same set of names. So what I did for the book was I just picked 10 names, just some that are well known, like the Gates Foundation and the Walton Foundation and folks like that, but then also some that maybe haven't received a lot of publicity for work in this space, like Koch Brothers. So I just picked 10 and I tracked their donations to 50 organizations that have been really instrumental in pushing this agenda forward. So this is just the tip of the iceberg of all the money going to this, but just those 10 organizations, 10 people funding 10 organizations or 50 organizations. That was $3.2 billion that I was able to find. And so this is undoubtedly a billionaire-led effort that's having really, really dramatic effects in communities of color across the country, and in many cases causing extreme harm. And I don't think we've talked about it enough as an example of systemic racism.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially some of the individuals that you've identified there, like, a lot of the people, especially watching this show, are not going to be surprised to find out that the Koch brothers are involved in this. But the idea that the Gates are involved in this, that Mark Zuckerberg, who's occasionally gotten, positive press cycles for donating money to schools and things like that, that you've identified both of them being involved in this. And obviously, they have a lot of money, so that can have a very outsized effect on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we think of them very differently, Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates on one side and Koch brothers and, some others on the other side. But in actuality, in this space, they're funding the same organizations. And so, I think they have very different ideologies that are driving their efforts. But the impact in many cases is the same. And, I think somebody like Bill Gates, I don't doubt his good intent in doing some of the things that he's doing. But I also think he has to be held accountable for the fact that he's contributing to this other agenda that he probably doesn't agree with, the Koch brothers wanting to actually dismantle the public school system entirely. I don't think that's Bill Gates' intent, but he's contributing to it probably unwittingly. And I think, he needs to account for that.
Interesting. So, I mean, is it ignorance? Is it they give so much money to so many different people that they can't necessarily vet everything? It seems like, especially if this is not one-time donations that you're identifying. If this is sustained support, it seems weird that they wouldn't necessarily know it's going to be money.
Yeah, no, I think they've come to it for different reasons, right? I mean, there are some folks who came to charter schools and in particular because they wanted to disrupt the education system, and they saw some of the real longstanding legitimate flaws in our public school system and wanted to do something different. And then there's other people who saw vouchers as a way to do something they've been trying to do for 60, 70 years, which is dismantle this public system. Mm-hmm. And that charter schools were sort of a way into that. It was a way to get a toehold into the system. So they came at it in different ways. But the long and the short of it is because of what they've done, schools are closing down in huge numbers in Black and Brown communities. And, if you follow this process and this agenda to its logical end, it really does threaten the educational opportunities of everyone.
Interesting. You hear a lot about the school to prison pipeline. We're going to go from talking about schools to talking about prisons and the criminal justice system. Obviously, one of the biggest topics being discussed as we're filming this interview nationally. So who is making money off of racial inequity in the criminal justice and prison system?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that has received, you know, a fair amount of attention over the years, what we call the prison industrial complex. But that's really, again, just a small, you know, small sliver of how folks are making money off this. I mean, there is this reality that we now have more people in prison than there are residents in 15 US states. So housing those people, feeding those people, providing healthcare to those people, transporting those people, that is big, big business. But outside from that, again, in significant part because of ALEC, we also have a lot of large corporations profiting off of very cheap or sometimes free prison labor. And so we have, you know, incarcerated folks in this country who are doing campaign calls for, you know, Michael Bloomberg's presidential campaign. We have them making actually like wow. US flags. There are incarcerated folks in this country who are picking cotton. So in the field. So that's certainly a big part of it. But also, you know, tough on crime, these tough on crime strategies have been a big political winner for many years. So it really has been used to divide the electorate and it allows the ultra wealthy to have their preferred politicians win more often. So it's been very effective in that way too. But the other thing that I spent a lot of time talking about in the book that we have to account for is that it is what they found is that it is cheaper to dehumanize people through things like mass criminalization and incarceration than it is to meet people's basic human needs. And so that's a wealth accumulation strategy in a, you know, morally bankrupt way, but it is. And so those are things that if we're ever going to create a truly just society that we have to confront.
Yeah. Well, look, I know in your book, you also go into how we defeat what you identify as Goliath. I'm sure that we can't touch on all of that, but what's one thing that we could do to fight back against admittedly incredibly well-funded, powerful, politically connected opponents who have a multi-decade advantage in multiple different industries? It seems like a pretty big challenge.
It is. And, you know, but I do think it's doable. You know, I'm frankly actually very excited about what's been happening over the last 10 months. I think, you know, the movement being built can do this, but we all have to recognize that there's really only one effective counterweight to the power of this kind of organized wealth, and that's the power of organized people, right? So to resist this agenda and advance one that's more favorable to low-income, working-class, and middle-class folks, we need to build people-powered organizations. So one thing I talk about in the book is, you know, maybe the best thing that any one person can do is to really invest their time, their energy, and any money that they have into grassroots racial justice base building organizations. There are hundreds of these organizations around the country who are doing amazing work, who are really leading this effort, but they're often frequently severely under-resourced relative to their opposition. So they need help in lots of ways. And so I would encourage all of your viewers to help out with those organizations any way they can. And I include a list in the book of some of the ones that I know and have worked with, and also on the website, richthankstoracism.com. That's a place to start, but there are many, many more that folks should really get involved with.
Awesome. Well, if you're watching this interview and you'd like to find out more, the book we're discussing is Rich Thanks to Racism, How the Ultra Wealthy Profit from Racial Injustice. And I want to thank Jim Freeman for joining us and talking about the book. Really do appreciate your time.
Thank you, John. Really appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.